Hello, my name is Father Deacon Maverick, and this is my podcast, The Ecumenist Tank. I hope you enjoy this episode with me.
Hello.
Hello, Sean.
Maverick.
Okay, guys, so welcome to the Ecumenist Tank. I am your host, Father Deacon Maverick, and this is my friend, Sean. So this is the first time that I've released an episode with someone else on it. And, I'm a bit slow right now because I just woke up and I didn't drink coffee yet, and I'm trying to delay my caffeine intake every day, so... I'm not going to take some caffeine. I'm not going to drink anything. So I hope that is okay with you, Sean, because that means that my orthodoxy level will be kind of like -5.
Well, I mean, it's you know, it's whatever you got to do.
You're just so chilled with the way you accepted that. Like, okay, man.
You gotta take things as they come.
One step at a time, man. So, so for those of you who don't know, like, the Ecumenist Tank is where we just come to speak about things that face the church, about Christian unity, Christian theology, and just everything related to that. So we might not even speak about Christian theology. We might speak about Islamic theology or anything that that's relevant to the conversation and stuff. And I don't want to be too formal with this conversation. I just want to have a chat. So Sean, tell me a bit about yourself and introduce yourself.
Well,
Chagisoge.
So I'm my name is Sean. I am a seminarian in the Polish National Catholic Church. I am about to finish my first semester. So I'm about to go on the winter break of my first semester here. I grew up evangelical and discerned a move into apostolic Christianity while I was in college. Took me a while, maybe 6 years actually, to finally end up where I'm at and get organized enough to actually be in the process of, you know, discerning the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of interests. I especially love foreign languages. I love studying other apostolic traditions, especially in other cultures.
Uh-huh.
I think they're a great example to me, and it connects to the fact that I want to do mission work and my missionary desire. I find benefit in studying how the church has adapted to other cultures. And it gives me a vision for what sort of things to shoot for as a missionary in a new culture.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's very cool. So, just for those of you who don't know, Sean and I actually know each other on a sort of, we sort of know each other, kind of know each other.
Sure.
So we met each other on Facebook, and the first conversation we had lasted like 6 hours.
Yeah. So
that was pretty crazy. That was like, well, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it and stuff. And when I was thinking about rebooting my podcast, because I used to do another podcast, the host Eucharistic and Hipster Talk, which was with someone else. That kind of took a hiatus, and then we just completely stopped recording and stuff. And the reason we stopped recording and stuff is just because both of our paths and our own, our own journeys were so different. So that by the time that we actually looked at this podcast, I realized that we probably weren't going to do another episode. So yeah. So yeah, man, the Ecumenous Tank. So Sean, tell me a bit about like what you think apostolic Christianity is. So I mean, when some people hear that term, they think about groups like the you know, the Irvingite Catholic Apostolic Church or the New Apostolic Church, the Old Apostolic Church. And some people even think about the Neo-Charismatic New Apostolic Reformation. And I know that is not, that's not what you mean.
Yes. I do not mean that. When I refer to apostolic Christianity, I refer to those church traditions which would describe themselves as Catholic and or Orthodox, and to some extent would be considered Catholic and or Orthodox by other groups as well. So, for example, the Catholic Church considers itself to be Catholic and Orthodox within a received tradition that comes from the apostles, and more or less is recognized that way by other churches of a similar, other churches which have received their apostolic tradition in a similar way, more or less. When I say an apostolic church, I'm thinking of a church that has a valid apostolic succession, a church which has a continuous received theology within the bounds of what would be like historical Orthodox and Orthodox Catholic thought. Which, you know, the theology of sacrament, the and all of the other peculiarities that come with an apostolic church. So I suppose I would put it that way.
Okay, cool. So you're probably speaking about churches like the Oriental Orthodox or the Roman Catholics, the sure. Eastern Orthodox.
Yes,
the Anglican Church and all of those groups that do the smells and bells and, you know, I mean, all of them do the smells and bells, but there are some theological or ecclesiastical differences,
certainly.
Like, you know, like papal supremacy, papal primacy, and the way that that's understood. Rome probably, they would probably see the Pope as more like a monarch that has this absolute rule, immediate rule in the church, this universal jurisdiction, as to where, you know, churches like yours and mine, we would probably accept a form of papal authority, but in a more of a limited sense, like a first amongst equal kind of first among equals. So what exactly is the Polish National Catholic Church? Is that a band? Is that is that a club? Is that like a fraternity group? Like, what is the Polish National Catholic Church? Is it for only Polish people? Is it like what's the big deal?
Well, in my own unofficial opinion, and, you know, as a seminarian, I couldn't speak with authority on the issue, but I would describe the Polish National Catholic Church as an American church in the authentic old Catholic tradition. That is a church which is old Catholic, in its received tradition, in its foundation, in its theology, and maintains that to this day. Old Catholic is sort of a buzzword in this country and maybe abroad also. Most people who you meet who identify as Old Catholic
Most of them do not have any meaningful connection to any actual old Catholic tradition.
Yeah, so, like, why old Catholic? Like, is that, does that mean that you guys are very old? Like, why not Roman Catholic? Like, so, yeah. let's say I haven't heard of this term before. I haven't heard, you know, the term old Catholic in my life. And I'm like, old Catholic, is that like Catholicism for old people? Like, sure. Why is it called old Catholic?
Well, the concept is that the old Catholic Church is, in our understanding, the church in the West that has maintained the faith of the Orthodox West, whereas, respectfully, perhaps the, well, other churches may have innovated. This is very clear in our history, even in Europe, going back to the original church in Utrecht. There is this concept of that it is a sort of a holdout in an increasing, it was a holdout in an increasingly ultramontanist papal world.
Mm-hmm.
Where my church comes in is where the sort of second great movement of old Catholics comes in, which is after the first ecumenical council and the defining of the dogma of papal infallibility. It's one of two great movements in old Catholicism. The first is in its foundation, and the second is in its this move from the Roman Catholic Church of academics, priests, and so forth that disagreed with the decision moving into the old Catholic Church. And it's in that time frame that the Polish National Catholic Church is established.
Mm. So I mean, this is a question that so many of the more established movements, the more established churches, the bigger churches, this is what they'd say. And I'm not saying I agree with them. So, you know, some of them, they'd say, well, why would you join this old Catholic Church, this Polish National Catholic Church, when you can just join the Eastern Orthodox Church? Why not just join the Roman Catholic Church? Why not just join a church that's more well-known and bigger and probably has a greater support system? You know, I get this all the time, and you know, I'm a continuing Anglican. And I mean, I know I have a response to that, but so that would be my first question. Why would someone join the Polish National Catholic Church? What does the Polish National Catholic Church even offer? You know,
Well, I think primarily the first thing that must be said is, before anything else, what the Polish National Catholic Church offers is the ancient faith once delivered to the apostles. Right out of the gate, I think our defining identity marker has to be in the fact that we are an apostolic church with an apostolic faith. We don't believe we're the only church that has that faith, but we do believe that we have that faith also. Now,
that, so you're making a very ecumenical, ecumenist, wink, wink, kind of statement, but that's kind of a buzzword with some people. But I'm just gonna let you continue certainly. That thought. Yeah.
No, you're right. We certainly don't. I do not. It is not my impression that the Polish National Catholic Church, in any way, and I would even say with great confidence, it does not consider itself to be the one true church. And in fact, it does not. It considers the Roman Catholic Church, the Orthodox churches, the and other churches to be, which hold to those views which are apostolic and have apostolic succession. It considers itself, it considers those churches to be equal mm-hmm. in spiritual authority to itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an, in the grand scheme of things, it is quite an ecumenical.
Mm-hmm.
It has an ecumenical mindset.
So I mean, let's just get to the more uncomfortable questions, the more uncomfortable topics. If you went to YouTube right now and mm-hmm. you Googled, or not Googled, but if you searched for what is the only true church, if you searched on YouTube for what the true church is and you mm-hmm. went down the various videos and stuff, I guarantee you there are going to be some people from some other traditions, and I'm not going to mention the traditions because I don't want mm-hmm. to, or maybe we will mention the traditions, but I'm not going to do that now. And they'd say, well, these guys are all nice and stuff, but they come from schismatic churches, so they're schismatic. I know that the Eastern Orthodox will say, yeah, well, you guys were in communion with the Roman Catholics. You guys broke away from the Roman Catholics, and the Roman Catholics are a schism of a schism. So why would we want to join a schism of a schism? So when you go to YouTube and you look at all the videos related to that question, that's the things that they'd say to you. And I'm probably going to say something about that too. But what do you think about it? And what do you think, what do you think the future looks like for churches like yours and its relation to those more, hyper exclusivist kind of churches?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think if I'm being quite honest, I think now is not the time for organic unity with those groups. Simply because I don't believe that they are ready for it. Now, and I say this in my own opinion, with utmost respect, you know, we consider ourselves to be a Catholic church. And to go to a group which insists on total absorption, assimilation, the destruction of the culture of our church, the destruction of various things that we believe that are not opposed to the Catholic faith. It's unacceptable. So I think that a future, you know, if with a church that's exclusive, and we can all think of exclusive churches, I think with the Holy Spirit, all is possible. But what would probably need to happen is for there to be, I think that both us and those churches which are exclusive are probably going to have to be humbled by the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Before a true organic unity could come about.
Yeah, so I mean, I know so many online personalities, and I'm not gonna, like, maybe like you guys know what I'm talking about, and they'll say things like, yeah, well, that church teaches created grace, that church teaches church teaches this and that and this and that, and they are so in your face about it, so explicit about the fact that so many that your particular church has made mistakes and stuff, and so they reason that that could never be the true church of Christ, and they'd also reason that that given this, that would mean, you know, that so I don't want you to give me an explanation of the canons of the church, but what would you say to people who are saying, well, there's just no way that you could be a valid church, like Like what do you so what I do nowadays is I just don't get into the argument. I just don't get into the conversation. And I know that there are a lot of people who get bummed out with me, and they just like, yeah, well, your church did that, and your church did this, and you know, and if you know anything about my community, I mean, I'm sure you do, you know that there's this big argument we have with the Roman Catholics. Now, the thing that's very interesting is that in the 1920s, 1930s, roundabout, the Orthodox were more that they were able to receive what we had, and they didn't expect us to go through these, through these rites of denying everything that we believed and stuff. But the relationship with the Roman Catholics tends to be a lot more difficult, because they would just say, no, utterly null and void. Now, unfortunately, I've just reached this point where I just don't care about that. You know, there's no reason for me to get into these conversations with people that just say, well, null and void, null and void, null and void. And I mean, I just want to say this, that if you are that kind of person that harasses people online just to tell them that they are wrong, that is probably not the Holy Spirit compelling you to do that, but your pride. So what would you say about that?
Well, I would certainly say if the question is not actually trying to speak about my church and my tradition with a spirit of charity, then essentially I will not have that kind of discussion with them. I am open. That's sort of a person who is approaching you in that way. I would have strong boundaries set up between us. That being said, if a person approached in charity and was asking me questions, I would have no problem engaging in a discussion with them about and to give a defense. I suppose I'm not quite as apologetic as I ought to be, but I find that a gentle approach based on relationship is been much more successful with me than trying to play the game which many play, which is this sort of, let's see if we can insult each other into changing our opinions about each other.
I mean, that's one of the major reasons I decided to do this podcast and why I named it what I named it. So, maybe we're changing topics, but I'll just get into this anyway. So, I know that many people, and I mean in my church, we have a lot of people who sometimes they feel like they want to join the Roman Catholic Church or the Eastern Orthodox Church. And, you know, we usually don't stop them.
Mm-hmm.
But we do make it abundantly clear what that would mean for them. So I know some people, and I mean, I've had a couple of conversations because... I contemplated joining the Russian Orthodox Church, and I realized that wasn't going to be the decision that I was going to make. But then I started realizing that there were other people that wanted to make that decision too, that they had to make that decision too, and they started speaking to me about this. And honestly, for me, and I mean, I don't know how this relates to you, but from my perspective, if I join another church and I get reconfirmed, re-chrismated, what I'm kind of saying is that I don't think the chrismation I had in the other church was valid. Now, of course, I understand that there are other reasons people leave churches and stuff, but, you know, there's also this other side to it. Like, you think, you know, that, yeah, and you don't actually think that where you came from was a sufficient form of Christianity. But on the other hand, we do have this other factor, so you know, where people leave to bigger churches. So I know this one incident where a small group of you know, old Catholic churches, and they're independent, so they're a breakaway from Utrecht, but they lost some members to the Episcopal Church. And the reason these guys left to join the Episcopal Church is because they just wanted a church with a building, and there were a lot of other reasons and stuff, but it was all about, you know, the church building and things like that. It wasn't actually substantial doctrinal reasons. So yeah, what would you say about that? If someone decided, hey, we didn't want to join the old we don't want to be a part of the PNCC anymore. We mm-hmm. want to become Roman Catholic, or we want to become Eastern Orthodox. What would mm-hmm. you say?
Go with God. I mean, certainly one of those two would sting more than the other. But
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, I think that it is up to an individual and the Holy Spirit to discern where they ought to be. And because of my understanding, I don't necessarily think it's out of the picture for a person to be led for a variety of different reasons to another apostolic church. I suppose that it does happen. Sometimes people do leave the PNCC for other apostolic churches. And sometimes we receive people from other apostolic churches as well.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't... I don't want to say it doesn't bother me, because I think that my church is a family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad to see family members go somewhere. But
so what would you say, like if there are reasons to stay
mm-hmm.
In the PNCC, what would you think those reasons are? And not just that, I want to kind of mix that question in with again bringing me to my question. Besides just being an apostolic church and stuff, like, why? I kind of want to reiterate, like, why? So what would you say?
Well, I think that the PNCC is firm, first of all. I think it's very firm in its faith. And is not subject to the movements of the culture. I also think that the Polish National Catholic Church is humble. It has no delusions about what it is or what its influence is. And also, I think because of the size and the nature of the people who have been in it, there is a very sincere strong and effective pastoral intuition among the clergy at all levels. It is very common for the primate of our church to get in his car and drive to this parish or that parish in order to celebrate the funeral for someone that he's known for most of his life.
Mm-hmm.
We are, it really is a family. I mean, it's most of the people I meet are, every time I go to an interaction, it's, oh, by the way, this is my cousin. So it's quite literally a family sometimes.
So now that we've covered the Polish National Catholic part of this, like you said that you kind of have a heart for missions, you have an interest in other languages and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any plans for the future with regard to that?
Well, certainly I am. I have things that I'm discerning. I am discerning with my hierarchy the possibility of doing mission work in the future. If I had my druthers, I would go and try and plant parishes in Japan. I've been studying Japanese for 10 years now. And I have a deep love, interest, and respect for that culture, and I would love to do ministry within it. But you know, it's all about where the Spirit leads and what the church needs.
So, I mean, why Japan? Like what you know about Japan and, you know.
Well, why Japan? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's something that I've wanted to do for 10 years now, since I was 15. It's something I've discerned over a very long period of time. And it's something I've discerned so long that it's almost this conglomeration of experiences, interests, and prayer that doesn't have a simple beginning, middle, or end.
Do you watch? Yeah. You can complete your thought.
I do watch anime.
What do you watch?
I watch One Piece.
Oh, you watch One Piece.
Yeah, of course. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Actually, I haven't seen that. Like, I just haven't taken the time to watch that.
It's not for everybody, but I think it's pretty good.
What's it about?
It's about inherited will and legacy and fate. It's about a family. It's about a family of protagonists, yes. So, essentially, it's split into different parts, with each main character being somehow a descendant of the first main character. And each of the characters' names can be made into their nickname of JoJo.
That sounds crazy, man.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, did you? So I mean, when I was growing up, and I still kind of watch it. I'm a fan of Dragon Ball Z.
Mm.
DBZ, Dragon Ball. I've seen Dragon Ball. I've seen Dragon Ball Z. I've seen Dragon Ball Super. I've seen Dragon Ball GT, which technically isn't canon.
Yeah.
But you know, there's this like this huge discussion about whether or not we can. You know, whether we can accept a DBZ, a DBGT as being, you know, a valid expression of Dragon Ball Z. Have you seen Dragon Ball?
Yeah, I've watched Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super. I didn't watch the original Dragon Ball all the way through, and I haven't watched GT. I never watched.
You haven't seen GT?
No.
So you know what's so funny about Dragon Ball GT is that you can kind of see how they're trying to set up this sort of like Christ figure in Dragon Ball Z. So when you see Goku's fight against Baby, he says things like, "I am light and you are darkness." And I'm like, dude, what are you saying? Mm. And I know on one occasion when I think this is when Goku was fighting Frieza. Well, this is Dragon Ball Z, but when Goku was fighting Frieza, he says, "I am the answer to all crying out."
Mm.
You know, and I was just like, "That sounds very, you know, I think I heard that before." And there's another instance where Goku actually speaks to Shenron, and Shenron's the dragon, and he hops on Shenron and he ascends.
Hmm.
And he becomes one with Shenron. So that was just very, you know, like do they know what they're doing here? Is yeah. this intentional? But then there's also a whole discussion about whether or not the dubbed Dragon Ball Z and the actual Japanese correspond, because apparently not all of the things do.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know. What else do you watch? Wait, have you seen Mushishi?
I've never seen that. I haven't even heard of
it. Oh my goodness, dude! Mushishi is crazy. It's my favorite of all time. It's my all time favorite. So in Mushishi, you have this guy who is a, you know, he's a like this kind of a mushy hunter. Uh-huh. And so mushy are these. Are not germs and bacteria. So basically, we have germs, bacteria, and stuff, and we also have spirits and all of that, you know. So Mushishi are kind of like the intermediary phase of creatures that are spirit but germs and bacteria, kind of like in the middle.
Hmm.
So they manifest in certain places, and some people have these problems like losing their eyesight or losing their ability to hear. They become deaf. And it's usually caused by a mushi. Or, you know, like someone who dies because of this mushi-related problem. So it's very gloomy. It's very dark. Very, very dark. And when he travels, there's this very sinister, ominous kind of sound that always permeates the episodes. These very dark sounds and stuff. I would really recommend it. That's probably one of the best animes I've seen.
Mm. Well, I'll have to take a look at it for sure.
Yeah, like, well, what else do you watch?
Well, you know, I watch things as they come along. I'm not as avid as I used to be, but I have a younger brother who watches very frequently and always throws a bone my way.
Older or younger?
Oh, he's younger. I find myself watching lots of Japanese media that's not always necessarily anime.
Okay.
Movies.
Did you understand?
I understand in a limited way.
Okay.
I'm not perfect. I can watch things without subtitles and maybe have a 75% to 80% comprehension.
Okay, now I'm jealous. I'm really jealous. I am so jealous of you, man, because I wish I was there. I wish I was on that level.
Well, unfortunately, it's very frustrating until you can understand all of it, because all you can see is the, you know, if you had a sentence in front of you, any sentence, and you can understand 80% of that sentence, unless you're somehow in tune with the context, it's probably going to be completely meaningless to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially how it is. You know, it's like understanding so much of what is being said, but then falling short right in front of comprehension.
Okay, so the problem I have with Korean is that I don't really get all the time that I want to study it. Mm. So a lot of my time, most of my time, not just a lot, but most of my time goes to teaching. So mm-hmm. I teach English, and I'm spending time with Sharon or something like that. So I just don't know. I wouldn't say I don't know, but it's I know a basic level of Korean, like things, but sometimes and it's all because of the way that Korean is kind of like structured. They'd say basic things, but you don't really know what they're saying because it's in another form of something you do know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know what I mean. So Koreans have different, different forms, politeness forms, and how formal the word is. So you'll have something like gomapda, which is thank you, gamsamnida, which is thank you, gomawa, which is thank you, gamsamnida, which is thank you, and gomapsumida, which is thank you. So I mean, there are a lot of ways to say thank you.
Yes.
So you might know one of those ways, and so I mean, I found out something the other day that I didn't actually know. That so I know that there are two ways to say thank you, like mianeo and chuesongamnida. So one is kind of like, but this kind of sorry only applies to saying sorry for something that you are responsible for. So if I accidentally hit you, or if I broke your pencil or something like that, then I'll say mianeo. But if it's a really bad form of messing up, I'll say chuesongamnida. But if I am not responsible for it, like if I go to a funeral, I'm not going to say mianeo because I did not, cause the death of your relative, So I heard, I think it's yugamieyo. Let me just check that because I do not want to be wrong on air. This would really, really suck if I got that wrong. But I didn't know that. And a lot of the things that I've learned are things that I just actually learned from other people. So I didn't learn it in a textbook, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So,
No, I certainly know what you mean. There's lots of layers to Japanese grammar, and I'll say this is a controversial thing, so I apologize to any Koreans or Japanese listening. But Japanese and Korean conceptually share a lot of have a very similar grammar system.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that it is agglutinative, in the sense that it is both are under, we're under such heavy Chinese influence. Mm-hmm. Even if you look at the word kamsamnida, that is actually in Japanese, that's kanshashimasu. Kansha, it's like
thanks. Well, I mean this is a sensitive topic, but I do think that there's a lot of studies that have gone into this that actually prove the relation between Korean and Japanese people, and maybe even Korean and Chinese people. I mean, it's not such a big deal, but
yeah, I mean, there's definitely it doesn't seem to me that they are related as much as they are under intense influence from each other. It's similar to, this is a bit obscure, but it's similar to how Mongolian and Turkish are both very similar and have been thought of in history to be related languages, but are in fact just, they have just developed with each other despite the fact that they are distinct languages.
Oh, I didn't actually know that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, that's very true. It's very prominent in their vocabulary, and the way the languages function are the same, but the forms are different.
So is there anything else that you'd like to say, man, before we wrap up and stuff?
Well, there are a few things that you asked that I feel like I should answer. No, I don't think the PNCC is just for Polish people.
Okay. Finish your thought, man.
I do think the experience of the PNCC has historically been tied in a very deep way to Polish culture, the same way any other church which finds itself representing a particular culture. One only has to think about the Oriental Orthodox churches. The same way in which Egyptian, Armenian, or Syrian culture has been influential on those traditions. That being said, I am not Polish. I'm from an English background, and I frequently meet people who are not Polish. I do frequently meet people who are. I would say that the PNCC is, before it is a Polish church, it is an American church. There is the Polish influence, but it is essentially something which is culturally similar to many other apostolic liturgical churches that are in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think the PNCC is a place to rest. It is not a place where you can join and go to war with other people. I think many people who move to apostolic churches find themselves, for one reason or another, going to war with other Christians.
Oh, yeah.
And that is just not something that makes sense in the PNCC. It's not something that's encouraged in the PNCC. In the PNCC, I think what is encouraged is for you to live the Christian life and to become a saint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to think about others.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think it's really unfortunate when we see people who've joined a more established church being very, you know, I mean, I'm trying to find a good, a nice word, but being a bit of a jerk and being quite, you know, un-Christian in his approach to people who have left the church that he or she has mm-hmm. joined. So, I mean, I've seen some crazy things online. I've seen people. I've seen people like call them all sorts of bad names, like you an apostate. This is gonna, you know, you're gonna, God is gonna condemn you, and God is gonna do this to you, and you need to repent, and you need to come back to the church. And you know, I'm kind of like, look. If you want someone to come back to your church, or if you think that someone should come back to your church, I don't think that the way you're going to do that is by making them feel like crap and telling them that they are terrible people in danger. You know, you might think that that is, I mean, people might think that that's a loving thing to do, but I just think that means that you're a bit of a jerk. And I want to say other words, but... You know, I'm kind of on air and I don't want people to quote me on that. But I really think that if you want to be concerned for someone, you need to pray for them or you need to leave them in God's hands. And I mean, I've seen some terrible things before, you know. I know people who have left Christianity altogether. And, you know, I know some people who became Muslim. They left the Christian church to become Muslim. And I mean, I was reading up on some Muslim things that apparently, it seems to be the common view that that Muslims believe that music is haram. Uh-huh. So they believe that it's unlawful. And this is very interesting because all of the, Muslims that I know, most of them that I know, they listen to music. So I just thought that was interesting. But, you know, getting back to the topic, I know so many people who have apostatized, where they've abandoned the Christian faith. And, you know, I think it's a very serious thing to leave the Christian church. But at the same time, I'm not your spiritual father. I'm just a dude, you know, with my own issues, with my own insecurities. I have my own spiritual journey. I don't know that the best thing for me to do is to stalk you online and do, you know, and to tell you how bad of a person you are. Because I've seen this. I have seen people stalking other people. You know, let me tell you about this, dude. I know a guy, and I'm not going to say his name. I was discerning whether I was going to join the Russian church. And, you know, I had some opinions, and maybe we'll speak about that on another episode, because I'm going to get Father Gregory on here, and we're going to speak about that elephant in the room that people have always asked me about. But, you know, this guy was laugh reacting on everything I was posting that was theology related. He constantly bullied and harassed me and told me how this was a bad person that I was listening to. He was telling me about how this guy was a bad person, how that guy was a bad person. He was telling me why this is a heresy, why that was a heresy, why that liturgy is a heresy. But he was just being a very terrible person, not really loving his neighbor. Because, you know, as deluded as people are, I don't think that you can be that deluded, you know, doing these kind of things and think that God is pleased with you doing that to other people, harassing people, telling them all of these things. So, I don't know what to say about those kinds of people. You know, it's like, oh, they overzealous and stuff. But I really want to say this. There's a point at which becoming overzealous can actually turn you into a pretty evil person. Because it seems like you have this, I mean, I don't even know what I mean, dude, but it's like this kind of inherent bitterness to anyone who disagrees with you, who has made a life decision, who agrees with you, you know?
Mm.
And I mean, there are a lot of guys who have abandoned, you know, Eastern Orthodoxy, Roman Catholicism, Anglicanism and stuff. And I don't know that I agree with them. I don't think that it was the best move for them. But I don't know if the best thing for me to do, and I don't know how it helps me spiritually, to say pretty bold things to them, you know? I mean, I don't know what to say, man.
It's definitely concerning, because I think all of us can say with some degree of confidence that that sort of behavior isn't Christian.
Yeah.
And you know, it's certainly not, I'm not those people's spiritual directors, and I can't point out those issues.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's those sorts of people, not much else you can do other than pray and kick the dust off your feet.
Yeah.
Because it's certainly not doing you any good to engage with them. Not you personally, but people in general, you know.
Yeah. So I have a text that I want to read, and you can add to to this, but I'm going to read it. It's from St. Luke, chapter 9, verses, I think it's 49. And now John answered and said, Master, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we forbade him because he does not follow with us. But Jesus said to him, do not forbid him, for he who is not against us is on our side. Now, at least this is one of the reasons I decided to do this podcast, the Ecumenist Tank. You know, I see a lot of Christians out in other churches, and when they see me preaching the gospel or telling people about Jesus, some of their responses, just like the people I mentioned, is to stop me and to say, no, you should join the true church. But that doesn't seem to be Jesus' response. Jesus seems to say, don't hinder them from doing this, because they can't be against us. And we are not against those churches. I am not personally against the Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Oriental Orthodox Church. Now, I might have some strong disagreements with them on some issues, but I don't. I think that they're on the side of the angels. You know.
Yes.
I mean, I find it completely bizarre when people make it their lives work to prove that other churches are wrong. And I ultimately, I don't know what you think about this, but I don't think on an objective level we can ever be 100% certain that we have all the truth. I don't think that it works like that. And I'm gonna say this, and again, this is me saying it, this is not Sean saying it, but I am of the opinion that if God is gonna hold us accountable, you know, and that, you know, to a standard that needs to be perfect, that God would be immoral. I actually think God would be immoral if he held us to this 100% standard, that if we don't get that standard on the last day and God's going to send us to eternal conscious torment just for making a mistake, a judgment mistake, when we don't have all the answers, I don't think that God would be the good God that he claims to be. And I don't think that God is going to hold us to this impossible standard. Is there anything that you wanted to say, man, before we wrap up?
Well, just that, you know, it was good talking to you. I'd love to,
today was very, how can I say, mellow. So, I wanted to have someone else on here with you. Maybe we can bring on some of our other friends to speak about, because I know one of our mutual friends, he's actually got a book out on Eastern, you know, Christianity in the East, you know, in the Far East. So
yeah,
that would be kind of cool to speak about that.
Well, I would certainly love to, discuss the PNCC more, and give more people more of an idea of what my church is.
I have some other questions for you if you can answer that before we wrap up. So
certainly.
So I know that my church, which is the ACC, is in an ecumenical dialogue with the OCA. Mm-hmm. And I know that your church has had that kind of a conversation with them. But that's not the question. Now, I know that one of the issues that's going to come up is the issue of the married episcopacy.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Eastern Orthodox, our Eastern Orthodox brethren, are not enthusiastic about married episcopacy, because we do have married bishops. Not all of our bishops are married, but a large portion of them are. So, what is the PNCC stance on that?
Well, the PNCC does allow for a married episcopate. All of our current bishops are married. Historically, there have been
both married and celibate bishops. The organizer of the PNCC, Francis Hodder, was a celibate bishop, as were some of the other bishops who he consecrated. So it's something that has been, you know, that we have made an allowance for, in light of obvious historical tradition. You know, no one can deny that the apostles were that some of the apostles were married, and that there have been married bishops in the history of the church. On an issue like that, I simply say that I respect the tradition that people have received. But I you know, I think that it's something that the church had the authority to restrict the episcopacy to celibate men, and it also has the authority to change that. So it's well, I understand that it's an issue. I think ideally, I don't see why it is as big of an issue as it currently is.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else that you'd like to say or plug?
Plug. Well.
Yeah. If there's anything that you want to plug, doesn't have to be your own book. Maybe there's something else that you wanted to say.
Well, if anyone would like to learn more about the PNCC, they can go to either the blog known as Was a Deacon's Blog, which is done by Father Jim Kinnicky, where he has a fabulous collection of PNCC links and information, as well as his own blog that he does there. If you go to pncc.org, you can also find documents pertaining to who we are as a church and what we believe. You ought to, if you're able to dig, even find the ecumenical discussions between both the Roman Catholics and Eastern Orthodox that the church has had. And of course, if anyone ever has a question about the church and wants to know more, I'm more than willing to reach out to anyone and have any a discussion with anyone about the church. So if anyone sees me on Facebook or on social media under, you know, the name Sean Matthew Dodd, I have no problem. No problem.
Okay. You can actually send me the link and then I can put it up.
The link for the blog.
Yeah.
I will. Okay. That's good.
Okay. Cheers, man.
All right. Well, it was good speaking with you, brother.
Same. Always good.
All right.